holding on your chest on the bays at the middle of the Amud, the line begins Tana Rabbanan. Talking about... Okay, thank you. Seder, thank you. Tana Rabbanan says in a braisa about the dinim of the Megillah, Hishmit v'sofer osiyos epsukin, if the sofer left out in the Megillah a couple of letters or a couple of psukim, v'koran ha'koreis k'maturgamon, and the reader, whoever reads the Megillah, reads them as if he was a maturgamon, just like the maturgamon hears the words of the pasuk and then adds the, what do you call it, and then adds the translation by heart, to hear the person read these couple of words or whatever by heart. Yotza. Then you yotza. So in other words, let's say, for example, you know, so in the middle of the Megillah, you have, you know, Achad Vorma Ela Gidoma, you know, Gidoma Achashverosh HaTaman, let's say, so, you know, it leaves out the word Achashverosh, let's say, and he reads it by heart. Yeah. The reason I mentioned from the beginning of the Megillah is because the Rishonim explained, based on the expression of the Gemara over here, and also later on your test, that it's important, it can't be missing at the beginning or the end. If it's missing the words by Hebe Me'ach HaShverosh, for example, that's no good. Anyway, so, Mesa, the Gemara says, have a contradiction. How you got Osius Mitush Toshes Omekodoi? If you have in the Megillah letters that are Mitush Toshes means that they're, what's the word for it in English? Smudged, unclear, Omekodoi, so ripped. Imrishuman Nikar, if you can see the marking, the leftover from the residue of them, then you Cherovim Lapsula, and if not apostle. So it's mashma if you have even one letter or a couple of letters or whatever where you don't see the rishum of them, you don't even see the residue of them, then it's apostle. Here we just said if letters are altogether missing, it's still kasha. The answer is
for the Megillah.
That we're talking about the Megillah, yeah. The answer is like Pasha Haba Kula Haba Mitsasa. One is talking about if the whole thing is like that, the other is only part of it. Part of it, you can even now it can be missing altogether. The whole thing, if the whole thing is smudged, for example, then it has to be at least that the letters are recognizable. Turn it up on him, we learn it, but I say, Hishmet Barkoda Pasuk Achad, if the reader, the Barkoda left out one Pasuk, Lo Yoma Ekref Kula Barkakach Ekref is a Pasuk, he can't say, fine, I'll continue reading the whole rest of the Megillah and then I'll go back and read that Pasuk. Alakoda Ma'o is a Pasuk Pelech, you have to start over from that Pasuk. That's the Megillah had said, the Mishnah had said, that you can't read the Megillah L'mafreya, this is part of the Mafreya, that you can't read it out of order. Similarly, Nichnas L'Veit HaKnesses, if you come into Shul, U'mot Tzibur Shekor Chetzi, and you find a Tzibur who already read half the Megillah, Lo Yom Ekro Chetzi, and a Tzibur V'achakach Ekro Chetzi, you can't say, I'll hear half of it with a Tzibur, and then I'll read half of it to myself. You have to hear the whole thing from beginning to end in order. Mishnah said misnamnim yotze b'cholo, that if you read the Megillah misnamnim, which means like when you're drowsy, then you yotze, which by the way, Mefarshim say, that's talking about if you're reading it when you're drowsy. If you're hearing it when you're drowsy, that's no good. Inevitably, you'll miss some words. When the Mishnah is saying misnamnim yotze, it's talking about you yourself are reading the Megillah and you're half asleep. As the Gemara is going to define now what misnamnim means. But if you're listening to the Megillah half asleep, then no good.
You're reading the Megillah half asleep. Okay.
Then because then you'll at least you read all the words. But yeah.
If you're listening,
Hey chidom misnamnim, what is considered misnamnim? We have this at the end of Pesachim as well. Amar Rav Ashi, nim v'lo nim, tir v'lo tir. And we have this also in Rosh Hashanah also, in connection with Tzkiyas Shofar. It's in a few places in Shas. So it means he's awake, but not fully awake, asleep, but not fully asleep. Dekorolei v'oni, it means they, for example, they call to him, and he can answer. V'lo yod l'haduri svara, but he doesn't know how to answer anything that requires any kind of thought. V'chimad korolei, but if they remind him, mitkar, then he'll remember whatever it is. So that's the misnamnim. That's the kind of situation we're talking about. Mishnah said, "Hayakos v'darsho magia," that if you're writing out the Megillah or darshaning it or proofreading it, and you're reading the words as you go along, so we said, "Imkiven leviyotze v'cholah," that if you're machaven to the mitzvah, then you yotze or not. And we discussed in the Mishnah the details of what exactly means that kavana. But the question is, heichidami, what are we talking about? Or are we talking about that he says pasuk by pasuk and then he writes it? So he's saying, so for example, he says by Hebe Me'ach HaShverosh, and then he writes in the Megillah by Hebe Me'ach HaShverosh. Kiven Levi Ma'avi, what does it help if he's Mechavin? Alpehu, he's leaning Balpeh. Ella, so you're going to say the other way around. The cost of Pesukah, Pesukah, V'korilei. So, okay, you're going to say the other way around. He writes down on the clock, Vayhi B'Me'ach HaShverosh, and then he reads Vayhi B'Me'ach HaShverosh. Still, Umiyata is a yotzer with that. V'amar of chelboy, amar of chamavah guya, amar rab. First of all, halacha kedivrei omekula. The halacha is like the opinion we're going to have in the next Mishnah. Three different opinions and one more in the Gemara of where, what point you have to hear the Megillah from in order to be yotzer. Do you have to hear the whole thing, or maybe is there a certain point, Ishihodi or Achad Varameela or whatever, from which you have to hear in order to be yotzer? First of all, the halacha is like Rav Meir who says that you have to hear the whole thing from Vayhi B'Mechash Veresh all the way to the end. Second of all, Vafilu L'man V'Amam Ishihudi, and even according to the opinion that says that you can hear from Ishihudi, even if you miss the part before that, you're still Yotzer, and similarly the other opinion, Tzricha should take Sovakula. Everybody agrees the whole thing has to be written. So even according to, so Rabbi Huda, for example, is saying that as long as you hear from Ishihudi till the end, you're Yotzer. But even he agrees the first parak and the first four psukim before Ishihudi have to be written in the Megillah. So how does it work over here if you're writing and then reading? Ella, the mancha Megillah kame, so it has to be talking about that the Megillah is lying in front of him, an already written Megillah, v'kori l'mino, psukha psukha v'kasavla. So he reads pasuk by pasuk from this already written Megillah, and then he writes it, then he transcribes it into a new Megillah. That's what the Mishnah is talking about.
So
he has one whole Megillah in front of him, one complete one, one which he's writing right now. He reads from the complete one, and then he writes, yeah. Can we say then that this Mishnah supports what Rav Baba Chana said? You're not allowed to write a single letter of the Torah or of the Megillah in this case or whatever, not from something that's already written. In other words, you cannot write by heart. This Mishnah seems to support it because the only way we can understand our Mishnah is if you already have one written. And my answer is no. No, the Mishnah doesn't necessarily have to mean that you have to do it that way. It could be the Mishnah could be saying it if it happens that you're doing it that way, that you're transcribing from an already written Megillah, then you can use that to be Yotzer as well. But not necessarily that's the only way to write a Megillah. Kufa, getting back to what we said, Amar Rabba Bachan Amar Yechanan, also lists of Oisachas Shalem and Aksat. We have a contradiction today. Amr of Shimon Elazar, Maisa but Rav Meir Shaholach La'aba Shana Ba'Asya. It once happened that Rav Meir went to declare a leap year in Asya. Asya B'Pashtos is Asia Minor, or Turkey nowadays, or someplace near there, or whatever. In those days, a lot of times, when the Chachamim wanted to declare an Ibriyar, the Romans would harass them and interfere with them and whatever, and therefore they'd have to go to places where they're not being watched as intensely. So even though Turkey was part of the Roman Empire then, but still, apparently, you know, they were more, the local governors or whatever were more willing to let things slide. So therefore we find it, so we find Rav Meir, we find later on in the times of Amoraim also, there were times when they went to Asya for this purpose. So Rav Meir went there. There wasn't a Megillah there, and this happened to be Purim time, because that's the time when you declare an Ibriyar. Not necessarily declare it, actually, you can only declare it in Eretz Yisrael, but he went to do the calculations, whatever. The custom of Libo, so he wrote a Megillah by heart, Bukra, and he read from it. So you see, you can write a Megillah Shalom and Aksav like Rav Meir did. What is Rav Baba Chana saying? You can't do that.
But you still read it from
him. No, of course you have to read from him. You have to read from a written Megillah. Everybody agrees to that. But Rav Baba Chana is saying when you're writing a Megillah, you have to be transcribing from one that's already written. We see Rav Meir didn't do that. There was no Megillah over there. Amar Abba, shiny Rav Meir, it's different with Rav Meir, Yimikayim Bey, because there's Mekuyim in him, what the Pasuk says, Va'afa Pecho Yashiru Negdecha. Literally, it means your eyelids will be straight in front of you. What does that mean? Amar Le'Rovim Bacham Le'Rov Yimimidifti, Mai Va'afa Pecho Yashiru Negdecha. What does that Pasuk mean, and what does that tell us about Rav Meir? Amalai says to him, Elu Divrei Torah, the Pasuk is talking about the words of Torah. The words of Torah are very difficult to know. To know everything, the pasuk says about the Torah, hasoif enecha boy. If you fold up your eyes on it, atoif Rashi says imtichpal enecha mimena. If you fold up, like you close your eyes from it for even a moment, then you forget it right away. But enenu, it's gone. So the average person has to keep on reviewing over and over in order to remember, otherwise they forget. But Rav Meir wasn't like that. Nevertheless, it was straight and clear by Rav Meir. So yes, he could write a Megillah by heart, and we know that it would be 100% accurate. The average person, we can't rely on that. Actually, the Yerushalmi says an interesting thing, that what Rav Meir did is, first he wrote a Megillah by heart, which he knew the text, and he knew all the Chaseiros, the Yeseiros, and everything by heart. The Gemara mentioned in a few places he was an expert cipher. But he couldn't be Yotzer with that one because it wasn't written Shalom, it wasn't written Minak Sav. Then he used that one as a template to write another one which he learned from. And then he took the first one and put it in chains, because he can't say in order that somebody doesn't find it and use it by mistake.
If the rabbi did that, it would be okay also. Written the Megillah by heart.
So the average person, no, that's the next thing.
The average
Reb Meir, we make an exception for. The average person can't do that. The average person has to write from an already written one.
Right. But yeah. Someone who's not an average person.
I don't know about the Rebbe. The Rebbe was not going to make new halachas for himself. You were saying Reb Meir. We're saying the next thing we're going to say, we're going to see about Reb Hanano, who also knew the whole Torah by heart and yet didn't have this hetek.
And also, yeah, it's that you know yourself. Like the Rebbe, maybe I know someone who's has some certain things that are really amazing about him, but I don't have him. I have some things that are different about me that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if the Rebbe was a sofer anyway. We know the Rebbe Maharash was a sofer. There's the famous Megillah that the Rebbe Maharash wrote, which we have copies of. But did the Rebbe? I have no idea. Anyway, Reb Chista Ashi Chelur Chananel Dava Kosef Svarim Shalom Naksav. One time, Reb Chista found Reb Chananel, who was a sofer, who was writing Svarim Sifrei Torah B'Pashtus, not from a written text. Amalei, so Reb Chista tells him, you should know, Ru'uya kol ha-Torah kulo likatzav al-picha, it's true, you're worthy that the whole Torah should be written according to you. In other words, you know, I know you know it letter perfect, al-kacham r'chachamim, but this is what the chachamim say, also l'chitav ha-yisachat shalem in-aksav. You're not allowed to write even one letter, shalem in-aksav. Now, the question is, so if you're saying that if Reb Chista is telling Reb Chananel that the whole Torah would be able to be written al picha, that means he's the same as Reb Meir. He knows it all letter perfect. So the question is, still Reb Chista seems to be telling him no, but we see Reb Meir wrote one, Shalom in Aksav, and nobody objected to that, so why is Reb Chista objecting to Reb Chananel? The answer is Shaset Chak Shiny. It's different in Reb Meir's case. It was a Shaset Chak. There is no other Megillah around to copy from, so therefore necessarily he had to write one by heart. But Reb Chananel has other Sifrei Torah around. Let him take one of those and copy from it. Another din in this, Abaya Shara L'Dvei Bar Chavu. Abaya allowed the people of Dvei Bar Chavu, the Gemara mentions in Bava Metzia that was a family that or a household or whatever that existed in those days, where it was a factory for producing tefillin and mezuzahs. So he allowed them, L'michtav, tefillin and mezuzahs, Shalom in Aksad. He allowed them to write tefillin and mezuzahs, not from a written text. They could write it by heart. Kaman ki haitana. Now, who is that like? Who was Abaye paskening for them like? He was paskening like the following Tanya. The Tanya, Rabbi Yirmiya Omer Meshum Rabbeinu. Usually Rabbeinu in this context means Rav. Tefillin and mezuzahs nechtavos shalom in aksav. That tefillin and mezuzahs can be written not from a written text. You can write them bal peh as long as you know it. Ve'ein tzrichas sirtut. And also, another din that Rabbi Yirmiya said in the name of Rav is that tefillin and mezuzahs do not need sirtut. You don't need to rule the lines. However, the halacha is tefillin ain't tzrichim sirtut. It's true that tefillin do not need sirtut, but mezuzahs tzrichim sirtut, but mezuzahs do. Why the difference? One reason, Mefarshim say, is because tefillin, anyway, what's the point of sirtut? That the lines should be straight and even. Tefillin are in their boxes. You never take them out of their boxes, really. Mezuzahs, in principle, you know, in those days they didn't necessarily use mezuzah cases. You put up the actual mezuzah parchment itself on the wall. It's easier to see. That the lines are not straight, and therefore it doesn't look so nice. To open it up and see it. Yeah, we're filling up.
That's maybe similar to the things like the, I think there's something like Thurston or something like that on, it's sometimes like, it's like the other way. It's, I guess you can usually do it like normally vertically or horizontally, and then you add like a few ones to it the other way.
Not sure what you're referring to, but no, we're talking about the lines that are ruled.
That would have to be something different.
Yeah.
They've
always folded mezuzahs. You roll them up for besoy for the rosha, but when do they start using mezuzahs? Okay, then the Gemara mentions the concept of a konah, of a reed that they use to put mezuzahs, but not always. Sometimes they just put it on the wall as it is.
Mezuzahs at the time of the Rambam, they were not folded. They were flat.
No idea. The Gemara says you're supposed to roll them. So I don't know. Anyway. So Tosfos points out in a few places, it's true, Tosfos says that here the halacha is tefillin don't need sirtut. However, there is another din that says that even when you're writing three words from a pasuk, you need to put sirtut. The Gemara talks about it in Gittin. So therefore, when the Gemara, when it says over here that tefillin don't need sutur, it means you don't need to rule every single line of the tefillin, but you do need to at least have the top line ruled. And once you write the top line, it's a sutur, then the rest of it can follow. And I think also they talk about that you're supposed to have sutur from the sides also to make sure that the beginning and end of each line are even. But the rest of in practice nowadays, so if you do sutur for all of them, but in principle, the halacha is you only need sutur from the top and the side. Whereas in mezuzah, every line needs to be ruled. And a sefer Torah, that's a machlokes haposkim. Aidi v'aidi nechtavas shalom in aksav. Both tefillin and mezuzah, like Rabbi said, can be written not from a written text. My time, a migras grisin. Why? Because everybody knows them. Everybody, you say the psukim, you say these parashiyos every day. So people know them by heart. Mishnah said, "Hoisik sort of the sam cholah." The Mishnah had mentioned several different types of inks or dyes that you might theoretically use to write a Megillah, which is not kosher. It's not kosher unless it's written in proper ink. The Mishnah had mentioned a few different things. Sam, and this is what I was going to translate them. Sam is what they call in Aramaic sama. In English, it's called arsenic. It's a mineral. It's poisonous, but they used to make a yellowish dye out of it. There's a mineral form of arsenic that's yellowish. Sikra, Amar Rabbi Ravachana, skartoshma. We call it skarta. Rashi defines it as a red dye that they used to use to paint window shutters. Koimos is koima. Rashi says koima is like the word gum. It means the sap of some kind of tree. That my mom seems to say that it's some kind of mineral.
They were chosen.
These are all different kinds of these are all different kinds of things that you could use for writing. Kankantoim is charta de oshkufi. Kankantoim is the blacking that shoemakers use to dye shoes black. The Rashi and Tosfos discusses over here. Rashi discusses. In a few different places in Shas, what it is exactly? Is it some kind of soot-based material? Is it some kind of iron or copper sulfate or something? Tosfos discusses over here. Are you allowed to put that stuff into ink? There's actually in the times of the Gemara, the standard ink they used to use for writing Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzahs was basically made out of carbon, coal black or whatever. For the black and gallnuts or something to make it stick to the paper. Later on, they developed a different kind of ink, which most different tefillin mezuzahs are written with nowadays, which uses iron sulfate in it, and that makes it indelible. You can't erase it. The only thing you can do is scrape it off the parchment. Tosfos discusses over here. Many Rishonim discuss the question: is only one or the other kind of ink kosher, or both of them kosher? The Rambam, for example, says that doesn't really matter. The Rambam says, for example, doesn't really matter the actual composition of it, as long as it's black, and as long as it's black, not any other color, and as long as it sticks to the parchment. Tosfos discusses over here. Tosfos discusses the possibility that maybe you're not allowed to use ink that contains this kankantoim, this iron vitriol or whatever. Because then the ink becomes unerasable, and we see from various places in the Gemara that the ink should be erasable. The halacha is not like that, though, because the halacha is that only applies, for example, to parasha sota, which has to be dissolved in the water. It doesn't apply to the rest of the Torah necessarily. When we get to sota, Bez Hashem, we'll have a long discussion about it. Anyway. Next, the Mishnah had also mentioned a few different writing materials. That's if you write a Megillah on its fossil. One of them was diftera, means moliach v'kamiach v'loy opet. It means skin that has been salted and it's been treated with flour, but it has not been treated with gallnuts. Those were the three stages they would go through in preparing skin to make it into parchment. In particular, Tosfos points out that when you haven't treated it with gallnuts, so nowadays they don't use gallnuts for that purpose. Nowadays they use lime, but whatever it is, that makes the surface that now if you write on it and then you erase the writing, you'll be able to see that it was erased. It's like you can't easily forge it. That makes the difference between diftera and cloth. Niyar, the Mishnah had mentioned, niyar is machka, is papyrus. any of those things, if you write a Megillah using any of those things, or on any of those things, it's possible. Mishnah said, Adjitek Sova Ashuris, unless it's written in Ashuris, Dichtiv, because the Pasuk says, Kichsavam Bechizmanam, that the Megillah has to be written according to its writing and according to its time. So just like the times are not changeable, we said the writing has to also be the standard kind of writing. And Aleph Sefer, it has to be written on parchment, Uvidyoy, and using ink. Hold on. Minolon, now where do we know this from? Because Ati Ksiva Ksiva, we make a Xer Shava between the two words Ksiva. Here it says that Esther HaMalka wrote the Megillah, and there's a different pasuk in Yirmiyah, the people asked Baruch, the Talmud of Yirmiyah, about this Megillah that Yirmiyah had written, that contained the Megillah's Eicha and all, is Vayemelahem Baruch, Mipiv Yikra Elias Kol Advarim Ha'ela, with his mouth, Yirmiyah reads to me all these words, and I write it on parchment with ink. So we see that for it to be called Ksiv, it has to be Allah Sefer B'diyoy. Just like the Megillah, just like we say in the Megillah. Mishnah says, Ben Ir Shehalach Lekrach, if you have a person who lives in a regular city, where they read the Megillah on the 14th, and then he goes to a walled city, or Ben Krach Shehalach Leir, or vice versa, someone from a walled city who goes to a regular city, if he's going to be returning to his place, which we'll talk about that in the Gemara, what that means, Kodesh Mekoyma, that he reads according to the place he came from. So if he's a regular person who comes to Yerushalayim, for example, he still reads the Megillah on the 14th. And if not, then he reads along with the people, he reads at the time of the people where he's visiting. From what point does a person have to read or hear the Megillah in order to be Yotze? Rav Meir Omakula, Rav Meir says you have to hear the whole thing. Rav Yehuda Omimi Yishuvudi, and Rav Yotze Omimachad Varmeila, from the elevation of Haman. So on that first thing about Ben Ir and Ben Krach, Amar Rava, Lo Shana Ela Sha'asid Lachzu B'Leila Yudalad. This that the Mishnah is saying that you read according to where you are right now. That's only Ela Sha'asid Lachzu B'Leila Yudalad. That's only if you're going to return on the night of the 14th. So you're there at the beginning of Purim, and that night still you're planning to you're still planning to leave to go back home. So you're there on some part of 13, whatever. You get there before sundown on the night of Purim. Remember, the Megillah has to be read twice, by night and by day. So you get there before Purim night. You're there at the beginning of the chiyuv of Mikra Megillah, and then that same night though, before it comes the morning, before the morning Megillah reading time comes, you're going to be heading back home. So then you go according to where you were from. Also, but if you're not planning to return on that night, so in the morning you're still going to be in this place, and then you read according to where you are right now. And Rishonim discussed the question: are we talking about what exactly do we mean by osid in this case? Does it mean that the Rif, for example, talks about the possibility that it means that he plans to return even if unavoidable circumstances end up keeping him there longer than expected? The Baal Amor and the Ramban have a field day discussing what exactly the Rif means by that. Anyway, Amar Rava. Where do I get this from? The pasuk says, Therefore the unwalled Jews who live in the unwalled cities. Now, if it describes them as the unwalled Jews, of course, that's what prazes means. They live in unwalled cities. Why does the pasuk have to define it? The chiddush is, the pasuk is telling us, that even somebody who is only a paruz for the one day is called a paruz. So therefore, if he's going to still be there on Purim morning, for the day he's considered a paruz. The rest of the time he's a ben krach, he lives in a walled city. But for today, he's a yoshim ba'arav paruz. He's sitting right now in a paruz city, and therefore he reads according to that. As opposed to, if he's still leaving that night, he's not even there in the morning. He's not even there in the morning. Then you don't consider that he's he's a paruz ben yoshim. You consider he goes according to where he was. So fine, we find the case then that if a person from Yerushalayim goes to an unwalled city, we're saying they read on Yerdalad, Mukaf Menolon. How do we know the other way around? That if a person from some other city visits Yerushalayim, how do we see that they celebrate Purim on Tesvav? The answer is Svaro. Same Svaro. Midaparuz ben yom ekaru paruz. If somebody who is a paruz for the one day is called paruz and he reads on the 14th, logically, Mukaf ben yom ekaru Mukaf, then by the same logic, somebody who's in a walled city for the one day is called a member of a walled city. And reads the Megillah and does the other mitzvahs for him on the 15th. The actual halachos about this, about when we consider when he's coming, when he's going, whether he's osid laksa or when not, whether it actually ends up being a little bit complicated. So if you're ever in that situation, ask a rav.
I'll see about that one.
Yeah. That's what we're talking about over here. We're talking about if they come back that night. Are they planning to come back that night? Are they planning to come? Yeah, there are all kinds of details involved. Yeah. V'amar Rava, ben kfar shaholach le'ir. What about if you have a person from a village who went to the big city? We learned at the beginning of the Masechta that people from the villages have the right to read the Megillah early on the 11th or 12th or 13th. But suppose he comes to the city on the 14th. Ben kach or ben kach karei ma'an. Either way, he reads with the people of the city, whether he's planning to return that night or not. My timer, why is that? Because high kivnei irbaru lemikri, basically a person from a village should be reading on the 14th, like big cities. V'rabbanan hu da'akilu al akvarim. It's just we said in the first perek that the rabbanan were makel on the villages kedei she'isaku ma'im amazon lachem shebakrachem, in order that they'll provide water and food to their brothers in the big cities. Or actually, we said they're not really in order to, but as a reward that they will, whatever. So all that applies when they're in their place. Then we give them that dispensation. But if he's in the city anyway, he may as well read like the people of the city. Now, does that actually mean literally that even though he read it on the 12th or the 13th or whatever, he still needs to read it over again on the 14th? That's a discussion over here. Tosfos discusses what's the logic. I mean, why should he have to read the Megillah twice? But okay, the fact is now we consider him like a Ben Ha'ir. So yeah, he may well have to. He read the Megillah, but tough luck. We discount that because it wasn't retroactively. It turns out it wasn't in the right time, and he'll have to read the Megillah on the 14th. Eitz Rabbi, Rabbi asks him, "What do you mean? Where do you see it? Where do you see that?" The Mishnah says, "Ben Krach Shahalach La'ir." You have a person from a walled city who goes to an unwalled city. Ben Kach or Ben Kach Kora Kam Kaimai. We said that. Actually, this is a Braita, not our Mishnah. We say that if a Ben Krach goes to an unwalled city, Ben Kach or Ben Kach Kora Kam Kaimai. Either way, he reads according to where he came from. Wait a minute, what do you mean? Ben Krach Sakad Ayatak. What do you mean? How could he be thinking that Braisa is talking about somebody from a walled city? It depends, like our Mishnah said, whether he plans to return that day or not. Ella Lav Ben Kfar. So you have to change the words of the Braisa. The Braisa is not exact. Instead of Ben Krach, it's supposed to be Ben Kfar. So therefore, what would the Braisa be saying? That a Ben Kfar, where either way, reads according to where he's from, according to the Kfar. So he reads on the 11th, 12th, or 13th, and does not have to read again on the 14th. Gemara says, V'lav Tarutzi Mitaritzis. Listen, you have to fix up the wording of the Braita anyway. You already had to change the word Krach to the word Kfar. So fine, change it some more. Tari, Karda Iman, change the Braita to say that he reads along with them in the city where he's located now. And then the Braita has no contradiction to Rava. Because anyway, the Braita is obviously, there's obviously a mistake.
The
Braitha.
Right.
You don't correct a Mishnah without some strong proof. The Yerushalmi, by the way, talks about the possibility, and some of the Rishonim bring it, that you could have a case where a person from an unwalled city is in a city on Yerdalad and then visits Yerushalayim or another walled city, whatever, and winds up having to read the Megillah twice. Or vice versa, you can have a case where a person from Yerushalayim is in an unwalled city on the 14th and back home on the 15th, and he winds up missing the mitzvah of Megillah altogether, basically, or something. That wasn't the right way of putting it, but whatever. A ben ear is in Yerushalayim on the 15th, and then back home, and then whatever. Then he misses it altogether, yeah. Mishnah said, Mehechem Koda Adamus HaMegillah V'chola, and we have three different opinions. What point do you have to hear the Megillah from in order to be Yotze? From the beginning, from where we talk about Mordechai, Be'ish Yehudi, or from when it starts talking about Haman, Achar Dvar Me'ila. Tani, we learn in a Braisa, a fourth opinion. Rav Shimon Yechoyim, Mi Balayla Ahu. That you only have to hear from Balayla Ahu in order to be Yotze. Amar Rav Yechon V'chola Mikra Echad Darshu. They're all darshaning from the same pasuk. Towards the end of the Megillah, it says, V'tichtev Esther HaMalko Mordechai Yehudi Eskal Toikev. Esther Malka and Mordechai Yehudi wrote all of the strength. Now, what does that mean? Manda Amakula, the Reb Meir who says in the Mishnah that you have to hear the whole Megillah from beginning to end, he says the strength, the pasuk is talking about, the strength of Achashverosh. So right away, the beginning of the Megillah starts talking about Achashverosh's power, how he ruled over the whole empire, and how he made his party, etc. Or Manda Amam Ishihudi, Reb Yehuda who says that you just need to start from Ishihudi, hold Tot Bishol Mordechai. The main thing is you have to hear about the strength of Mordechai. Umanda Omar Machad Varmaela, Tokpa Rabbi Yossi, is Tokpa Shal Haman. The important thing is the strength of Haman. Umanda Omar Balailahu, Tokpa Shal Nes. And the one who says, Rabbi Shimon Yechai, who says that from Balailahu, because he says you have to be the strength of the Nes. So what's the point? So Mepharshim talk about the idea that the Machloikas is basically like, what are we focusing on over here? If we say, for example, you need Tokpa Shal Mordechai, then what it's saying is that you have to focus on the fact, look what a mighty emperor Achashverosh was, and yet the Jewish people were saved. If you say you begin from Ishihudi, look what a tzaddik we were zoicha to have, Mordechai, who saved us, etc. And each, same thing with each of the other ones. The Rebbe a few times talked about the idea, since the halacha is like a mayor, that you have to hear the whole thing, meaning beginning all the way from Vayihi B'mei Achashverosh. One idea of it is, the Megillah also ends by talking about Achashverosh's power, the Chamas, the Tokpo, Gurasa, etc. One idea that Rebbe talked about is that we see from that, that even with all of Achashverosh's power, and he didn't lose any of his power, he still retained his full power, and with that power, he's ordering that the Jewish people should be saved and everything turned, but not from beginning to end. That's one idea of it. You could know, but according to them, if you didn't hear it, it's still to be written. The Gemara says, but it's still to be written in the Megillah. But as long as you hear from that point, you've gotten the essential point of the story.
Also, what the Talmud often tries to do is that what is the least amount you can do and get away with it, and that because it's not that much. You said, okay, here we're going to make these restrictions. Anyone can make decisions. Finding out where the minimums are.
In a lot of Maimonim, by the way, it talks about why are we saying that Tokpa Shal Nes is from Balailo Ahu, not the Doshnath HaMelech. On the face of it, Tokpa Shal Nes is once, when Esther actually petitions the Hashverosh to save the Jewish people. Why from Balailo Ahu? So in a number of places, no, it's Balailo Ahu Hashverosh couldn't sleep. In the next Perek, in Perek Zayin, in the second party of Esther with Hashverosh, where she finally tells him, Ish Tzav Oyev Haman Hara Azeh. You would think that's a type of mess. And the gist of the explanation is that Balailahu Nadadash, we said towards the end of the first parak a few days ago that Nadadashnath HaMelech means not only King Achashverosh's sleep was disturbed, but it means Kabyachal the Abishah's sleep was disturbed. Because all this time the Jewish people have been sleeping, Yoshnam and Amitzvahs, now they're going on the Siddur Nefesh, so Kabyachal that wakes up the Abishah up above, and that's the type of mess. Yep, well, the Chavona is after this, but yeah. Without Chavona, yeah, but Chavona is towards the end of Perek Zayin. That's already after Esther's second party. Balailahu is before that.
That's also true.
Right, but we're not talking about that.
The sleep of the
Nes not being. Right. That's what we're saying. That's why Balailahu is the Tokpa Shal Nes, because it represents the Ebishter Kabyachal waking up and then taking a more active role. Yeah. Rav Huna Amar Mehalcha. Rav Huna says these four opinions about where you have to hear the Megillah from are basing themselves on a different pasuk. The pasuk says, "Mod ra'u al kocha." Why did they see about this? In other words, the Megillah was written. Rashi says, "A Megillah nichtevet v'nichreis lahidia l'doris," in order to tell for future generations. Ma ra'u ba'osa azman. What did people see at that time? Sha'asu ma sha'asu, which caused them to do whatever they did. Or mafarish al kocha. So and so explained. They did whatever, because of such and such, what did they see that made them do this, and what consequences came to them? So the different major characters in the Megillah, each one, there's a different thing that they did, each one for a different reason, and each one a different thing happened to them. So, Man Amakula, the one who says the whole thing, he's saying like this, Ma ra Achashverosh nishtamish b'kelim shal Beis HaMikdash? What did Achashverosh see, what made him decide to use the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash at his party? Al-Kacha, the reason is because of this, Bishum d'chashiv, shivim shan, shnin, v'la yifra, because he calculated, like we said in the first parak, he thought 70 years of Golos are over, the Jews aren't haven't been redeemed yet, so therefore he figured it's safe. Umahi zi'alem, and what was the consequence that came to him? The Vashti ended up getting killed. So therefore you have to start from the beginning of the Megillah in order to have that in order to have that part of the story. Well, Mandom Ishihodi, Rabbi Hodo says that you have to begin from the story of Mordechai. It's Umar Ra Mordechai di Kani Bahaman. What did Mordechai see? What made him decide to make Haman angry at him by not bowing down to him? Al Kacha, the reason is because the Shavi Nafshava Dezara, because Haman was making himself into an idol. Umahi di Alayam, and what were the consequences that came? De Isra Khishnissa, that the Nes happened. Umanda Omame Achad Varmaila, the Nes of Purim. The Nes of Purim. The whole mess of Purim. That all flowed from the fact that Mordechai was willing to provoke Haman, was Mordechai la'yuchar v'la'yishtach, that he's standing up proud as a Jew enough and not going to bow down to Haman and his Abed Azara. Uman da'amam achad v'armayim. It goes like this. Ma ra'am and sh'niskana b'chol ha'yehudim. What made Haman angry and jealous at all the Jews? Al kocha. It was because of this. Bishum de Mordechai la'yuchar v'la'yishtach, because Mordechai didn't want to bow to him. And as we said, first he got angry at Mordechai, and then the Rabbanan, and then the Jews in general. That's the Al-Kocha. Umohi Gialim, and what were the consequences that came to him? That he and his sons were hanged. Umanda Omim Balai Lahu, the fourth opinion, Rashbi, who says that we begin from Balai, that you only have to begin from Balai Lahu. He explains the Pasuk, Ma Ra Achashverosh Lahabi Yasef Azachronis. What did Achashverosh see? And by the way, the Pasuk says Ma Ra'u in the plural. So each one, Marsha explains, there's more than one person involved over here. It wasn't just Achashverosh decided to use the Caleb, for example. He talked it over with his advisors. Wasn't just Mordechai didn't bow down to Haman. He convinced the other Jews over there not to either. So forth with all the other ones also. So then it's Ma Ra Achashverosh Lahabi at Sefer HaZichronis. What did Achashverosh see? What made him decide that they have to bring the Sefer HaZichronis? Is Al Kocha. The reason is because because Esther had invited Haman to the party, and like we said a few days ago, that started making Ahasuerus nervous. Maybe they're plotting against me. Umahi v'aleim, and what's the consequence that came? Again, the Isra Chishnissa, that the Nes happened. So therefore, you have four different ways of looking at what's the essential cause and effect like in the Megillah.
They were saying
That's what we said before, yeah. That was one explanation when we said, Balai Lahon Yod Nashnat HaMelech, that Rav had said over there that, yeah, it's because, not necessarily the relationship, but at least like they're plotting, they're in cahoots against me, yeah. Amr of Chelber, Amr of Chomba, Guy Amr Av, Halacha Kedivra Emakula, the Halacha is like a mayor that you have to hear the whole Megillah from beginning to end. And even according to the opinion that says that you only have to hear from Ish Yehudi or all the other opinions, everybody agrees. Everybody agrees the whole Megillah has to actually be written out. You can't have the first part of it missing. As we said before, that a few letters or whatever, a few words can be missing, but not the beginning and not the end. And also, Mepharshim say not a whole concept in the middle, like not an entire pasuk, let's say, or an entire clause or something. The Megillah is on the one hand called a sefer, like we said before, it has to be written on parchment with ink, etc., but it's also called an igeres, which means a letter. What's the difference? Nikres sefer, it's called a sefer in the sense shim tofer b'chute pishtem tzula, that if you sew it together with threads of linen, then it's possible. The Gemara actually discusses in Makkos the question of what about a Sefer Torah. There's a machlokes over there whether a Sefer Torah has to be sewn up with gidim, like we do, or whether it can be sewn up with linen. The halacha is it has to be gidim. In the case of the Megillah, we're saying it also has to be gidim. But for Nikras Igeres, but it's called an Igeres in the sense that Shemitah Boshlushichut Gidim Kshera. As long as you put three threads of gidim in it, then it's kosher. You don't have to sew the whole thing with gidim. Just three threads. Rav Nachman says, it's only kosher provided that those three threads of gidim are mishuloshim. Now, what does that mean? Rashi and Tosfos both discuss that it means you divide the height of the Megillah into three parts. You have to have the one stitch of gid is at the bottom of the top third. The next one is in the middle of the middle third, and the next one is at the top of the bottom third. So that way, there's an equal distance from each. That there was an equal distance from each stitch to the next, and from the end stitches to the end. The Rambam explains it differently. That mishuloshim means that in every place where there's sewing with gidim, you have to have three stitches of gidim. Three stitches here. That's enough. There's also on top of that a machlokas of showing him what about does the rest of it have? Can the rest of it be left completely unsewn, or should you sew up the rest at least with linen thread so it doesn't fall apart? This that we're saying the Megillah is called an Igeres, by the way, is also why we spread out the Megillah. Actually, that really belongs to the next piece of Gemara, why we spread out the Megillah when we lay in it, because it's like an Igeres. It's like
what
a letter. Because the Megillah calls it an Igeres. The Igeres HaPurim
HaZos. Right, yeah. But what makes it an Igeres?
Because originally it was sent out with a letter. So it still has that halacha to that extent, that it doesn't completely have to be sewn up with gidim. It can be sewn partly with linen, and also they spread it out. Amen. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, HaKodah B'Megillah HaKsuva Ben HaKsuvim Lo Yotze. If you read from Megillah that is written among the other Ksuvim, so you have a scroll of all the Ksuvim, and among them is Megillah Sester, then you're not Yotze, because then you're not doing Ksuvim Nisa. Otherwise, if you just have like that, it looks like you're just reading a part of Tanakh. You know, nobody realizes you're reading it for the sake of Purim. That is only if the Megillah is not a little bigger or a little smaller than the rest of the scroll. But if it's a little longer or a little shorter than the rest, so when you're reading it, you can see it's visibly distinct from the rest of the scroll. Less one, but then there's not a problem, because then everybody sees that it's a separate thing of its own, even though it's in a bigger scroll. This is what I was saying also, that this is in Mephoshim say, that this is where we get that we spread out the Megillah like a fold it like a letter, first of all, because it's called an Igeres, but second of all, that demonstrates we're not reading from it like we read from a regular sefer in shul. It's something special. And that makes the presuming itself. In Torah, by the way, in Sofos Megillah Esther, the Alter Rebbe has a long mimer over there, in the course of which he discusses this idea about that the Megillah is called Sefer and called Igeres. He explains that basically a Sefer is something permanent, and Igeres is like you write a letter to somebody, it's a temporary thing, and then you throw it in there, and then you throw it away. So in the same, the Megillah has like a temporary and a permanent component to it also. It's a permanent thing, part of Kisvei HaKodesh. It's a temporary thing because, I mean, the circumstances that it's describing were one-time things. You know, the Limos HaMashiach, we're not going to know of those kinds of things. But nevertheless, we say that the Megillah Esther is more than all the Kisvei HaKodesh, that it lasts forever. The Megillah Esther ain't a tale of Olam, even when all the other Sfarim of Tanakh are bottled, then the Megillah Esther will never be bottled, because the safer part of it is the Iker part. Gemara says, Levi bar Shmuel have a kakari kamed Rav Yehuda. Levi bar Shmuel one time was reading the Megillah in front of Rav Yehuda, and he was reading out of the Megillah Haksuva ben Haksuvim. He was reading from a Megillah that's written among all the other Ksuvim. Amalei, so Rav Yehuda told him, no good. Hare Amru, but we just said, the Chachamim said, Hakodah Megillah Haksuva ben Haksuvim. If you read from a Megillah that's written among all the other Ksuvim without it being any bigger or smaller than them, lo yotze, because you don't have the person in Issa. So this won't work. Go get a regular Megillah. Amar Rav Chiya Ba'Abba Amar Yechanan. So further on this, Rav Chiya Ba'Abba says in the name of Rav Yechanan, Hakodah B'Megillah Aksuvah Ben Aksuvim Lo Yotze. That, as we just said, if you read from a Megillah that's written among all the other Aksuvim, you're not Yotze. But then, having said that, Umachu La'Amorcha, he hit it on the head. Like he said, I know I said this, but now actually I'm going to tell you something that sort of modifies that, that sort of that makes a loophole in that. But Tzibur Shanu. This that we're talking about is only when you're in a tzibur. Now, why is that? That you can't read from a whole scroll of tzurim that has Megillah Esther in it. The yachid, it wouldn't be an issue. Now, why would that be? The Mephoshim talk about. I mean, if you read it in tzibur, what's the problem? The tzibur is not worse than a yachid. Why would we say the yachid you're yotze and the tzibur you're not? There's a lot of different reasons. One of them, one simple reason is because indeed the yachid you never read from a book of ksuvim. There's no standard thing to read from a book of ksuvim with the yachid. With the tzibur, there is. So the yachid, if you're reading from that, fine. If, you know, nobody's going to think that you're reading it just down in order to read ksuvim. But if you do it for tzibur, where you read from a sefer Torah like that, you read from Nevi'im like that, people are going to think you're just reading part of Tanakh and not realize that you're doing it as Pesum and Issa. Here's another kind of thing like that, where we see Rav Chiya Ba'Abba says something in the name of Rav Yechanan, and then he immediately qualifies it. Shir ha-tefer halachal Moshe Mitzinai, that you have to leave over some of it unsewn, is a halachal Moshe Mitzinai. If you ever take a look at a Sefer Torah where one sheet is sewn to the next one, you'll notice the stitches don't go all the way up to the top and the bottom. You have a little bit of gap at the top and the bottom that's unsewn. Usually nowadays also they put a sticker made out of parchment on the back of it to help hold it together, but whatever, there's that little bit at the top and bottom that's unsewn. So we're saying it's halachal Moshe Mitzinai. But then again, he hit it on the head, meaning again, like he modified that. He said it's not really a halacha Moshe Mitzinai. It's not really that it's ma'akiv. The reason why you should do that is in order that the Sefer Torah doesn't rip. Because when you're rolling up the Sefer Torah, when you're doing Gelulah, if you have it sewn all the way to the top and the bottom, you may not realize if you're over-tightening it, all of a sudden you'll rip it. Whereas if you have that little gap on the top and bottom, if you start over-tightening it, you'll notice the gap is getting bigger, and you'll know to stop. Another thing, on a different topic, but again, this is the Rav Chiya Ba'aba saying the name of Rav Yechanan, so the Gemara puts them all together. If there had been left in the cave where Moshe and Eliyahu stood, we know from in Parashat Kisisa, it describes that Moshe asked to see the Eibush's cupboard. The Eibush tells him, "V'samticha b'nikras atzura, I'll put you in a cleft in the rock, and I'll pass over with a crazy kapi." And later, by Eliyahu, we find that Torah Parashat Pinchas, same thing. That he goes into a cave, and the Eibush tells him, "Save Ramat Zabahor Lifnei Hashem," and a wind and a storm and whatever, and then there's called the Mamadaka, a still small voice, the voice of the Eibushter speaking to him. So that cave, it was the same cave, actually, they were both at Har Sinai. If there had been left in that cave, Kim one neck of Machat Sidkis, even a hole the size of a needle that's used for sewing up little rips in clothes, and Machat Sidkis, Rashi says, Sedek means a crack. So it means like the kind of needle that you use for sewing up little holes or little rips in clothes. A very small needle. If there was even a tiny needle point hole left open in the cave, then Moshe and Eliyahu would not have been able to withstand the light of the Eidosh there, because it would have been so intense for them. They had to be completely covered from it. In other words, Shenema kilo yirani adam v'chay, as the pasuk says, no person can see me and live, even the tiniest bit. My dichtiv, what does it mean? The pasuk says about Moshe Rabbeinu described the luchos, and on them is kechol advarim asher dibra Hashem imachem bahar. On them, like all the words which Hashem spoke to you on the mountain. So Rabbeinu Chananel explains the Gemara's point is, what is it with ba'aleihem? Aleihem means literally on them. Like, besides what it says in luchos, there's more than that. And Marashah says we're getting from the word kechol. It means there's more than just kechol advarim, there's something else as well. This teaches us that Hashem showed Moshe not just the Torah Shebichtav, but Dikduke Torah, the details of the Torah. Rashi explains, like for example, the different things that we learn when the Torah says es or gam or ex or says the word ach or rak, and therefore tells us to exclude something that's called Dikduke Torah. V'dikduke sofrim, and the details of what the sofrim, what the chachamim wrote. In other words, that we find a lot of times the Gemara will take a Mishnah and be medayek from a word in it, or from a word that it says, or a word that it doesn't say in the Mishnah, and be medayek halacha. And that's called the Duke Seferim. Umasha Seferim Asidim Lachadish, and also the Eibishter showed Moshe everything that the Seferim, everything that the Chachamim are going to make new dinim in the future. Umayniu Mikra Megillah. What is that Chiddush? Like we said in the first parak, out of all the 55 Nevi'im in Jewish history, the only thing they ever added is Mikra Megillah. So that's the kind of thing that Hashem showed Moshe. No, David just showed him it. There's a lot of discussion what exactly it means, what exactly does David teach Moshe. One idea of it is, based on a medrash, is that David taught Moshe the generality. The specifics then were developed in each generation. But Kol Masha Talmud Vosik Asim L'Chadish is all included in what the David gave to Moshe, because all the klolim are there. The Rambam discusses the Rambam discusses in the introduction to Sefer HaMitzvahs that the people before him who counted, who enumerated the 613 mitzvahs, they counted Mikra Megillah and Ner Chanukah and whatever among the 613. And the Rambam says, why? What are we say Asher Kedushanim Mitzvah? It's very nice, but the Rabbanan. What, you think you're saying the Eibishter told the Eibishter told Moshe, if it should happen 1,000 years from now that the Greeks are ruling over you and you get saved from them and there's a Nes Chanukah, then you should do, that's not logical to say. But so according to the Rambam, then what the Gemara would mean over here is, again, not that the Eibishter told him, if there comes a time when Achashverosh is ruling over you and you're in trouble and so on and so forth, rather the Eibishter told Moshe the general idea that there is this concept of Mikra Megillah. How exactly it will develop, that remains to be seen. Mishnah says, HaKol Ksherim Likras Es HaMegillah, everybody is kosher to read the Megillah and to be motzi other people, Chutz Mecheres Shoyte V'Katan, except for a deaf person, Shoyte, and a child. Tosfos points out of you, usually cheresh in Shas means somebody with a deaf mute. They can't hear and they can't speak. Here it has to mean somebody who can't hear either, because obviously he can speak, he's reading the Megillah. But he's cheresh, he can't be motzi other people because he himself can't hear the Megillah. If he can't be yotze the Megillah himself by hearing it, he can't be motzi other people. Rabbi Yehuda machshir b'katan. Rabbi Yehuda says that a katan is kosher. A katan can read the Megillah for adults. And See, there was a discussion that Amban, I think, says that yes, an isha could in principle could be mostly men. You might have an issue that's a bazillion to the tzibur, as I was going to say later on in the Masechta about calling up a woman for an aliyah. But then in principle, yeah, they have the same level of chiyuv. That's the idea. That's the busher of the tzibur. Yeah. So the Gemara asks, "Man tana cheresh di'evid nami loy." Which tana is it that says that a cheresh, that a deaf person, even b'di'evid, cannot be motzi? Amar Rav Masna, Rav Yosi. That must be according to Rav Yosi. The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Brachos, "Hakoreh shema b'lo yishmiel la'oznei." If somebody reads shema and does not actually make himself hear the words with his ears, like we talked about yesterday, he mouths it with his lips, but he doesn't actually say it in a way that he himself can hear it. Yotza, and Rav Yosi emar lo yotza. So by the same way as Rabbi Yossi is saying there, you're not Yotze Shema unless you actually hear it. By the same thing, Rabbi Yossi would say over here, you're not Yotze Megillah unless you actually hear it. And if you can't be Yotze, you can't be most of the other people. I think I asked why. Umay did Rabbi Yossi heva d'yevet nami loy. Why? Who says our Mishnah is according to Rabbi Yossi, and then you would be saying that a cheresh even b'di'evet cannot be most of the other people? Why? Dumer Rabbi Yehuda he. Maybe say that our Mishnah is according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara assumes that the Tanner who's arguing with Rabbi Yossi over there is Rabbi Yehuda. Because in the Mepharshim say, because in the next part of that Mishnah does have where Rabbi Yehuda says something and Rabbi Yossi says not. So we assume in the first part of the Mishnah also it's Rabbi Yehuda. Anyway, maybe our Mishnah is according to Rabbi Yehuda. Or lachatchila hu d'loy. Maybe all our Mishnah means is lachatchila. A cheresh cannot be mighty other people in Megillah reading. Hadiyevet shaper dummy. But b'diyevet, maybe it would be fine. Maybe that's what the Mishnah means. And Tosus points out that eventually, the halacha in the case of Shema is like Rabbi Yehuda. Even if lo yishmiel la'oznav, you're still yotze. Even if you don't actually hear the words you're saying, you're still yotze b'di'evet. Therefore, the Gemara would rather try to say that our Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Yehuda as well. And that's why the Gemara is asking, why are you assuming it goes according to Rabbi Yehuda? Say it goes according to Rabbi Yehuda because halacha by Shema is like Rabbi Yehuda. Yeah. That even if you don't hear the words, you still, even if you just say, then you still yotze. The Gemara answers, "Loi takadai." You can't think that way. Dekatani cheresh d'mira shoyter v'katan, because the Mishnah had put together three cases: cheresh, shoyter, and katan, and that means they're all the same thing. Ma shoyter v'katan di'evid nami loy, just like the shoyter and katan, even with di'evid, you can't be yotze by hearing them, and that's a given. Everybody agrees to that. Av cheresh di'evid nami loy. Necessarily, the Mishnah must be saying that a cheresh, you're not yotze from even with di'evid. That has to be according to Rabbi Yossi. I ask why? Why? Maybe each one is according to the way it is. A cheresh is l'chatchila only, and a shoyter v'katan, nobody ever also. And how do we know? The answer is that can't be. V'katani sefer Rabbi Yehuda machshir v'katan. Since the last part of our Mishnah says that Rabbi Yehuda says that a katan is kosher to read the Megillah, v'klal the reish alive Rabbi Yehuda he. Well, that implies that the first part is not according to Rabbi Yehuda. Still, maybe you could say the whole thing is according to Rabbi Yehuda, because it's not the same thing. The first part is talking about what's possible. The second part is talking about what's kosher. Rashi says, I don't really like that girsa. That line isn't really adding anything to the discussion over here. But the question is, Vidulma Kula Rabbi Yehuda. Rashi says, it's like extra wording, isn't it? Yeah. But what the Gemara asks is, Vidulma Kula Rabbi Yehuda, maybe you could say that the whole Mishnah is really according to Rabbi Yehuda, or Trei Gavni Katan Katani La, because the Mishnah might be talking about two different kinds of cotton. You can have a cotton who's not yet at the age of Chinuch, and you can have a cotton who is at the age of Chinuch. Rashi says over here the age of Chinuch would be 9 or 10. Other Mepharshim argue that not necessarily. I mean, we say 9 or 10 when it comes to fasting on Yom Kippur. For different other mitzvahs, there'll be a different age of chinuch, depending on whatever kind of mitzvah it is. But whatever it is, there can be a kid who is below that age, who is not yet chayev in the mitzvah of hearing Megillah, and therefore, but maybe he knows how to lay in it. And that would be, we're saying that you can't be yotze from them even with the Eved. And then you have a cotton sheaf, yelach chinuch, who's of the age, where he's of the age of chinuch, and he knows how to read it, so Rabbi Yehuda would be saying, you could be yotze from him. So then the whole Mishnah could be according to Rabbi Yehuda. V'chasuri mechzera, and the Mishnah would be missing some words, v'hachi katani, the Mishnah would mean like this, hakol k'shem l'kasam megillah chutz v'cheresh shoyter v'katan, and we're saying cheresh would be only l'chatchila, shoyter v'katan would be even b'di'evet, b'med v'orim amurim v'katan shalei v'yelach chinuch, when is that talking about a katan who's not yet at the age of chinuch? Abel b'katan sheigia l'chinuch, afil l'chatchila, but if it's katan who's of the age of chinuch, 9 or 10, like Rashi says, then even l'chatchila you can hear from him, says Rabbi Yehuda, share Rabbi Yehuda, machshir b'katan, because Rabbi Yehuda says that a katan is kasher to lain. So then you don't have to say that the first part of the Mishnah is according to Rabbi Yehuda. You can still say the whole Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Yehuda. Tosfos points out, by the way, according to the Chachamim, which the halacha is like them, you can't hear Megillah reading from a katan. The question is, Tosfos says, why not? I mean, Megillah reading is only Dirabanan. A katan is chayiv only Dirabanan. Why can't one Dirabanan be moitzi another? The answer is, Tosfos says, and this is a basic concept that comes up in a few other places in halacha, a katan is chayiv in Megillah reading because of a double Dirabanan. The Dirabanan of you in the Megillah, and the Dirabanan that he's a katan and he needs his chinuch. The adult is chayiv in Mikra Megillah from one Dirabanan. Somebody who's chayiv in it only because of two Dirabanans cannot be moitzi somebody who's chayiv because of only one Dirabanan. The Gemara asks, "Mayu kimta Rabbi Yehuda?" So what do you want to say? That our Mishnah is according to Rabbi Yehuda, v'di'eved, and you're saying that our Mishnah then would be saying that only l'chatchila are you not allowed to hear from a cheresh, but v'di'eved you would be allowed to. But then you have to ask, Ela hadatani, Yehuda b'rei Rav Shimon ben Pazi, what about another din that we learned, Yehuda, the son of Rav Shimon ben Pazi, says, cheresh hamadaba ve'ena shemeya, a person who is deaf, he can speak, but he can't hear, turam l'chatchila, is l'chatchila allowed to take truma? Even though he needs to make the bracha, you have to make a bracha l'afish truma, and he can't hear it, nevertheless, we're saying l'chatchila, he's allowed to take truma. You'd have to ask, Mani, who would that be according to? Rabbi Yehuda, the evidence of Chassidim alone. If it's according to Rabbi Yehuda, you just said in our Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda says that you can only be Yotze from a Cheresh by the evidence, not Chassidim. Rabbi Yehuda, the evidence Namila, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, even by the evidence, it's no good like by Kriyashma. Which Tana would be saying that it's good even like Chassidim? Mela, if you say that our Mishnah is according to Rabbi Yossi, then you say, okay, Rabbi Yehuda is not talking in our Mishnah, so Rabbi Yehuda might well say you can be Yotze from Cheresh Lachchila. Fine, then that case, if Truma would be according to Rabbi Yehuda. If you say our Mishnah is according to Rabbi Yehuda, who do you have left? My aunt asked back, so what? The Elamai Rabbi Yehuda, Mafil Lachchila. So what are you going to tell me? That you think then that Rabbi Yehuda holds that even Lachchila with Shema Yu Yotze without hearing it? Well, then you have to, and in that case, Rabbi Yehuda, you want to say would be saying that even Lachchila you can hear that a cheresh can be moitzi other people by Megillah reading. You can't. Ela Hadatanya. What about yet another braisa about benching? Lo yivarach adam birkas hamazon b'livoy. A person cannot bench in his heart. And in his heart over here, again, doesn't mean thinking about it. Here to lav kadibur, it means saying it without, it means mouthing the words without actually hearing it. A person should not benching like that. V'imbirach yotze, but if he benched like that, he'd be yotze. You'd have to ask Mani, lo Rabbi Yehuda v'lo Rabbi Yossi. According to what you're saying now, that wouldn't fit according to either Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Yossi. Because Yir Rabbi Yehuda afilah chachila, Yir Rabbi Yossi afilah diyavin nami loy. You're trying to say our Mishnah, you're trying to say that our Mishnah, there's no Rabbi Yehuda in it at all. There's only Rabbi Yossi. At the beginning of the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda comes in on the end by the cotton. Which would mean Rabbi Yehuda holds l'chila, you can be Yotze Kriyashma with it, you can be l'chila Yotze Kriyashma without hearing it, you can be Yotze Megillah reading without hearing it, you can take Truma l'chila without hearing the bracha, but then he would have to say the same thing about benching. Whereas Rabbi Yotze was saying holds that even b'di'evid you're not Yotze. If we're saying by benching there's a difference between l'chila and b'di'evid, again we're back to the question, who would that be according to? So you still, either way, you've got a contradiction. And the answer is la'olam Rabbi Yehuda. You can, after all, say that is according to Rabbi Yehuda. That the one about truma is according to Rabbi Yehuda. That v'afilu, and he holds that even l'chatchila you can be yotze if you don't hear. But v'loy kasha hadidei hadirabe. So what about our Mishnah? There's a difference between what Rabbi Yehuda himself holds and what his Rebbe Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah holds. D'tanya, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a Mishum Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, HaKore Shema Tzorach She'ashmiya La'oznoi. Rabbi Yehuda says, in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, that when you're saying Shema, you have to hear it with your ears. Shenema Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. And we said yesterday, HaShmei La'oznecha Ma'ashata Moitzi Mipicha. You have to make sure, heard with your ears, what you're saying with your lips, with your mouth. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, that L'chila you have to hear. He himself might hold that you don't even need that. No, not always. Not always. Sometimes we find that a Tana said something, and then later on we figure out that it was in the name of his Rebbe. And Rav Meir says that no, I disagree with that. Asher anochim tzav chayim al levavecha. No, the pasuk says that that you have to say these words, which I commanded today, should be on your heart, which means acha kavanas alev hein hen advarim. The main thing is not hearing it. The main thing is having kavana. As long as you say the words, even if you didn't actually hear them, you still yotze. Gemara says, oh, so now you bring in Rav Meir, hashta to office lahachi. Okay, now that you pointed out that, now that you came to that point that there's Rav Meir involved over here, afilu tamer Rav Yehuda kadabi through the lay. You don't have to be doichik and say that Rav Yehuda disagrees with Rav Elazar ben Azariah. You could say behold the tani Yehuda bereder Rav Shimon Pazi, the case that we talked about with truma, we were saying that a cheresh can a hatchila take truma and make the bracha even though he doesn't hear it. That would be Rav Meir. So it would come out, in other words, we have three different opinions. Before we thought there were only two opinions, Rabbi Hoda and Rabbi Yossi. We know Rabbi Yossi says it's no good even b'di'eved. Rabbi Hoda, we were going back and forth whether he holds that l'chatchila or whether he holds b'di'eved. Then we said maybe we have Rabbi Hoda versus his Rebbe, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Maybe Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah holds only b'di'eved, and Rabbi Hoda himself holds even l'chatchila. Now we're saying, maskana, you don't need that. You can say Rabbi Meir holds even l'chatchila, Rabbi Hoda holds only b'di'eved, and Rabbi Yossi holds not even b'di'eved. So going back to our Mishnah, then when it says like Kol Kshir and Likus Samagilah, except for a Cheres Shoyt B'Katan, we can assume like we did at the beginning that we don't need to say that we're making a distinction between Cheres, which is B'di'eved, versus Shoyt B'Katan, which is even that Cheres, which is only the Chachila, you can't be Yotze, but B'di'eved you could, versus Shoyt B'Katan even B'di'eved. We could say the Mishnah is straightforwardly according to Rabbi Yossi that all of them are possible, even B'di'eved. Rabbi Huda would disagree with that. Rabbi Huda disagrees on the Katan, and Rabbi Huda would also disagree, and he would say that B'di'eved the Cheres is okay too.
The Gemara seems to be referring itself to...
So this way we don't have to say that Rabbi Huda is arguing with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah.
What's the problem with anything about
this? You don't want to assume that a Talmud is arguing with his Rebbe unless you have to. Yeah.